Change behind us is the sandbar where Roger Green discovered an East Polynesian pearl shell lure, the only authenticated artifact that ancestors of the Maori brought with them from their island homelands in the Pacific. Up the inland end of our estuary is a wooden boom built in the days when kauri logs were floated down the valley for collection and transport to sawmills on the Waitemata. Then there are the people. In my student days, I knew Tom Seddon, born in 1884, who in childhood had enjoyed the company of his father's friend, George Grey. So I had shaken the hand of someone who had shaken the hand of Sir George Grey, Governor of New Zealand at the time of the Northern Wars. And Grey had shaken the hand of Hone Heke. Much later I knew Fina Cooper, whose father, Heremia Te Wake, had been born 2 years before the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. These proximities gave me the feeling, if not quite the reality, that I was but one generation removed from the most momentous events of 19th century New Zealand history, and that made those events seem all the more vivid and close to my own lifetime. Writing this book has confirmed that feeling. A few words are in order, perhaps, to say what the Penguin History of New Zealand is and is not. It is not an encyclopedia that attempts to tell the story of every district and hamlet and to name every famous New Zealander from All Blacks to the first European child born in Waipuku Row. A compendium of those proportions is being assembled by the Ministry of Culture and Heritage for transmission alongside the Ministry's online edition of The Dictionary of New Zealand Biography. It was not my intention to duplicate those ventures. Instead, this volume provides an overview for understanding the unfolding of New Zealand history as a whole over the near millennium that the country has been occupied by humankind. In particular, it identifies the myths that have shaped New Zealand cultures and provided them with cohesion and coherence. It examines, too, what happens when those myths are challenged. It reveals how societies are conditioned not so much by events as by group memories of events. And it confirms that the basic needs driving human history are the search for secure places in which to live, eat, shelter, reproduce, and practice cultural or spiritual values. It is currently fashionable to speak of the histories of a country as if there are many versions of national history, which there are, and many ways of approaching such histories, which there are, and as if they were all of equal value and validity, which they are not. This book is unashamedly a history of New Zealand in the sense that its narrative has been conceived by and passed through the mind and sensibility of a single historian, and in the sense that it identifies some explanations, the hows and whys of history, as more plausible than others. The text does, however, draw on a range of sources, Maori and Pākehā, male and female, privileged and unprivileged. And it draws on the work of fellow historians who have preceded me into the field and into print. The most important of those sources and colleagues are named with respect and gratitude in the acknowledgements. One further point needs to be made. While I have relied often on the work of colleagues, this book is not written for other historians. Much of what I say and the manner in which I say it will be familiar terrain for professional peers. Instead, this volume is directed at curious and intelligent general readers, Maori and Pākehā, who are not historians. It focuses on things which such readers in the 21st century ought to know, and perhaps need to know, about the history of their country. Michael King, Coromandel Peninsula. Prehistory. 1. A land without people. In Queen Charlotte Sound on the 17th of January, 1770, Joseph Banks, naturalist on James Cook's first expedition to the South Seas, caught a last vibration of primordial New Zealand, a land where bush grew to the water's edge and trees were filled from ground level to canopy with copious bird and insect life. This morn I was awaked by the singing of the birds ashore from whence we're distant not a quarter of a mile. The numbers of them were certainly very great, who seemed to strain their throats with emulation. Their voices were certainly the most melodious wild music.